Chapter 5, Sly Like a Fox. Sunday morning, Jerry Fox parked his car in his particular assigned spot behind his office, just blocks behind the tall buildings of Kendall Square. He walked up Cambridge Parkway, the side street, where he had arranged to meet Simon, and chose one of the park benches overlooking the Charles River. Since he predicted Simon would be late, at least he could enjoy a moment of peace and admire the photo-perfect view of the dome atop the Museum of Science, which seemed to emerge from its mirror-like reflection in the river. Groups of gulls congregated on the silvery islands of ice, afloat on the sapphire water. Seemingly, the birds were undaunted by the biting winds, but from their squawking, it appeared they were complaining about how it was way too cold for November. Except for a few hardcore joggers, anyone with any sense decided to stay inside. Jerry pulled his knit cap down over his ears, tucking his graying ponytail, now hanging over his scarf, inside the hat. He took a sip of his herbal tea from his insulated commuter mug and checked his watch. Fox shook his head in disgust at his stupidity at making an early morning appointment with someone as young as Simon. 30 years ago, when he hardly had a care in the world, Jerry would have slept until noon on Sundays after a Saturday night of drinking with his friends, but he doubted Simon had any friends. Well, after rubbing his hands together for warmth, he put on his fur-lined leather gloves. Thanks to his regular workouts, Jerry was a muscular guy, and the cold did not usually bother him, but its frigid grip began to penetrate his legs, covered by his perfectly distressed jeans. Maybe he was just getting old. Bleary-eyed from too little sleep, Simon crunched through the snow from the street and approached from the rear. He slid onto the bench next to Fox and brushed some snow off of his brown sneakers. His feet were already freezing. He had snapped the fur-trimmed hood off his khaki parka at his chin, exposing only a small slit of his face where white puffs of breath escaped from his mouth. Simon set his laptop on his legs for warmth and scowled as the raw wind blasted down the river, freezing what was the exposed part of his face. It was just like Fox to plan a meeting in horrible conditions, like some cheesy spy movie. So, what's up, Fox? What's so damn important we had to meet at the crack of dawn on a friggin' cold Sunday morning? What's the big deal? He watched some geese land next to the gulls and wondered if there would be a turf war, but the gulls stayed to themselves as the geese waddled off to their side of the ice. Jerry cleared his throat. His voice was gravelly and strained.
"It's not the crack of dawn. It's 8:30, a perfectly normal time to be up and about. You must know I'm a suspect in Natalie's murder."
Simon blew a large puff of condensation.
"I'm not surprised. You were dating her, right?"
"Not exactly. I'm married, you know. We were just kind of friendly. I know the cops questioned you about why you were fired, but now they've started sniffing around about our little project."
Simon turned towards Fox, whose eyes hid behind his mirrored sunglasses and were unreadable.
"How did they find out about that? I made sure it was super secure."
"I don't think they know much, but evidently they've been digging deeper into Natalie's records and found some notes referring to it in your employment folder. She had seen you working on the project during company time and questioned you about it. She became suspicious when you wouldn't talk. The cops are now extremely interested in why she fired you. They now have the idea it might be related to what you were working on."
"What the fuck? You said no one would ever know about it."
"I know, I'm sorry. Why did you work on it at Visiozyme? Are you that much of an idiot? It's your own fucking fault. They don't know the whole extent of it, just that there's something there. But it's enough to make us suspect."
"You're sorry?" Simon's jaw muscles flexed. "You might be a big-shot board member at Visiozyme, but this was your baby. I told you it wasn't a good idea. Biological weapons? What the fuck were you thinking? Look, man, I was just your flunky. You hired me to design the sequencing. I worked on it at Visiozyme since I was so fucking bored there.
Unfortunately, that's not what the cops think. I wanted to let you know they're going to be questioning you again because they seem to believe it was your idea. I want to help you with what to say.
Help me? I'll tell them the truth. Why, what did you say? You blame this on me?
Sweat appeared on Simon's forehead, but quickly evaporated, making him feel colder. His teeth began to chatter. He wasn't sure if it was from the cold or his nerves. His stomach felt like a guitar, whose overly tightened strings were about to snap. They already know Natalie fired you when she found out about this freelance project. She didn't know I'd hired you outside of your job there, but she was starting to ask questions.
Right. So I suppose that's why you killed her. Simon suspected Fox had killed her, but dismissed it, since Jerry had always been friendly to him. He was the only one at Visiozyme who ever bothered to talk to him except for Steve Hahn. But they shared an office, and communicating was sometimes unavoidable. They were never friendly except for when a tiny bit of bonding over jokes about Natalie Saltz. Fox had appeared every Friday and presented Natalie with a dozen yellow roses before taking her to lunch, including the day she had been poisoned.
You'll never know, will you? So you're pinning this on me, Fox nodded gravely.
Fuck, man, I don't think so. Simon watched a medical helicopter land on the roof of Mass General just across the river, taking small comfort in the fact someone else was having a bad day, although he could hardly imagine it being worse.
Jerry offered Simon a shrewd-looking half-smile.
Who's going to believe you? You're this crazy, dysfunctional programmer. Look, I'm just giving you a heads up. It's going to be your word against mine, but if you have any evidence on your computer, I strongly suggest you delete it before we, have some consequences. What do you say we peek at your laptop?
Simon gripped the computer tightly.
That's not happening. Even if there's something on here, which there isn't, I still have the backup if I ever need it. You would know that. You already have the folder anyway. I suggest you delete it from your computer. I'm not sure what you're looking for. What's the big deal?
His words shot out with small bursts of condensation.
Look, I'm not just messing with you. Open the laptop.
Jerry's hand started to reach into his pocket.
Simon panicked. What the hell? You have a gun? Are you kidding me? Don't be stupid. You can't shoot me. Man, I'm your insurance policy. It would be obvious you did it, considering Natalie's death. If I'm murdered, don't you think the cops will figure out who did both?
You did kill her, didn't you? Simon's eyes blinked as if he'd swallowed a strobe light.
Open the laptop, Whitehead.
He slowly pulled his hand from his pocket, just enough for Simon to see the pearly handle of a gun. Simon gulped. Confident, he deleted all his emails from the Visiozyme server with Natalie about getting fired.
Well, there was a chance the cops could have grabbed them from her computer before he'd gotten to them. The project with Jerry Fox, codename Lily, was still indexed on his server backup, and it wouldn't show on his laptop unless he logged in. But that would only be a problem if the police seized his server. It was encrypted, at least, which would slow them down. It wouldn't show on Simon's laptop, but there was the more immediate problem of OMG.
The instant he opened his laptop, the program would spring to life on the screen.
Fox inched the .22 caliber out of his pocket. Open it, Whitehead. His low voice sounded flat. I don't know what it is that you think you're going to see. Frankly, I don't get how a slimeball like you got to be on the board of a major biotech company.
The revolver now pointed directly at Simon's crotch.
Open it, wise guy, or I'll shoot off those oversized balls you seem to have grown.
Sure, man, don't get so excited. What's the big deal? Simon opened the laptop, and OMG's query page glowed back at them, complete with its new logo. Its categories for searches that he'd coded were laid out neatly and ready to go.
There. Are you happy?
Fox sniffed, leaning into the screen with a strange grin on his face.
What are we looking at here?
Sorry, but that's proprietary. I'm not at liberty to share it with you. He moved to click a key to change the screen, but Fox pushed his hand away and scrolled through the query page.
Simon groaned. I don't think you're in a position to be holier than thou. What is OMG?
The new logo was embedded in a drawing of a cloud, and it clearly floated over search fields for name, income, relationship status, emails, police records, and more.
"Well, well, well, Whitehead, when did you do this? You've been a busy boy. Looks like you might have some bargaining chips after all."
"It's not mine to give you. This belongs to my client."
"Who's your client?"
"I can't say."
"I never knew you had so much integrity."
Fox's gun inched closer to his crotch.
"Would you like to rethink your answer, my little nerd boy? I'm sure I didn't hear you right."
"Not really. What do you care? You own half the startups in Kendall. What's another little app to you? And a gun? Really, Fox?"
"Maybe I'm greedy. I want to know what my little programmer is into."
He moved the gun even closer.
"Okay, okay. Her name's Kylie Maynard."
His words came out in squeaks since his throat was so tight. "You don't know her. She's a young entrepreneur who just got her MBA. Look, man, this isn't even finished. Don't even think about using it."
"I already thought about it. Let's say we take it for a spin. If this does what I think it does, it could be very useful. Sounds like you might be a little sweet on Miss Kylie."
Simon groaned. He typed Jerry Fox's name into it. "It's going to take a while to generate a report," he said.
"I have time."
"Look, man, it's freezing out here. My fingers are too numb to type. Can we at least go to a coffee shop or something?"
"I don't think it's a good idea if we're seen hanging out together, do you?"
asked Fox.
"How about you go home and send me the report? While you're at it, I'm sure you still have Lily on your server. Delete it, as well as any records on your log. But before you do that, put it on a thumb drive and put it in a secure place, not in your apartment. Then I want access to this OMG program. You are to meet me at 4 this afternoon at the Civil War statue on the top of the hill on the Boston Common. Don't even think about going to the police. Don't even think about not showing up. I will find you. You think you have problems now? You haven't seen anything."
Simon looked up, startled, as if Fox had read his thoughts. Jerry's voice had become an evil-sounding growl.
"Look, Whitehead, this is how it would play out. You go to the cops, and they will sniff around until they find out more about our little project, and then you will spend the rest of your life behind bars. Understand?"
Simon nodded slowly.
"Good. 4 o'clock?
Simon snapped his laptop shut and stared at the frozen ground, feeling sick. "Yeah, sure. Whatever you say.